1, 2, 3, testing. Okay, this is Tuesday, November 29th. I'm at Art Schaefer's house. We just had a wonderful dinner he cooked for us, and we're going to talk about his experiences in the Navy in Kodiak. But we're going to start out with Art, would you tell us a little bit about where you were born and where you grew up at?
Okay, I grew up in I was born on a farm outside of Forest City, Missouri, August 29th, 1920. When I was born, we were lived in a real narrow canyon that the hills were so steep you could only see the sun during the noon hour.
What did your dad do?
He was a farmer.
He's a farmer. So you had a lot of experience as a kid working on the farm and stuff?
Oh, yeah. Gee, we get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and take care of all the chores by 7, and we'd be out in the field by 8 o'clock.
What did you guys grow?
Corn and hay and wheat and oats and potato. Of course, we didn't sell potatoes and stuff. You know, we raised all of our own garden stuff.
So how many kids were in your family?
13, 7 boys and 6 girls.
Ah, that's quite a...
And I was about the middle.
You're the middle child, huh?
More or less, right.
So, as you grew up, I know you had some really exciting jobs. Tell us a little bit about what it was like to work on the railroad.
Well, worked on the Burlington Railroad down between St. Joe and Kansas City. And we lived in old bunk cars with upper and lower bunks with a mattress, and we didn't have any sheets or anything like that. There was no bathing facilities. If we have to go to the bathroom, we have to go out in this cornfield. And by the time we left there, it was well fertilized.
I bet.
Want to take a bath, we'd go down to this old pump, and we'd pump water for each other to take a kind of bath.
How old were you when you did that?
About 16.
Wow. And then did you also work on a dam? Did you say that you worked on a dam before?
Oh, no. My brother Russ worked on a dam when he was in the Civilian Conservation Corps.
Oh.
Anyway, we had one old guy. See, me and my brother Russ and another kid named Charles Porter and the two bosses were the only people that were not bums. The rest of them were bums. 35 people, see, on this gang. The rest of them were old bums, and they'd work a while and move on, and here come a new one. And we had one guy who would never take a bath. And we told him one day, if you don't take a bath, you're not going to sleep in our car. And he wouldn't do it. It was all kinds of that awful language. And he was coming back to camp one day. We stopped on this motor car, and we stopped right in the middle of this bridge over a river. Couple three of us grabbed him, threw him over the side into the river.
Oh my God.
We waited until we made sure he got out. The river was real muddy, so it didn't do him much good. But he didn't come back to camp. He just stayed away.
What did you do when you were working on the railroad? What kind of work was it?
Well, we were pulling out old ties and putting in new ones and raising the track up. And had been cinders, you know. Mm-hmm. Which wouldn't last too long. We were using this marble, crushed marble, they call it chat. And our job, we'd get up in these old, big old cars and had this marble in. And we'd have to take our shovels and make sure it slid down under the wheels of the car. And it was all wet usually, and they'd have to stop and give it a big shake like that, you know, with the engine. And it all started going down, and we'd turn loose our shovels and grab the side of the car so we wouldn't go down underneath the wheels too, see. And by pulling those ties out, my brother and I used to run a race to see who could pull the most ties. We'd have a bum on the outside, and you know, we'd use these big old ice tongs. And we'd give a big pull, and the tie and the bum and all would go down over the embankment. Oh, they would complain to the boss, and the old boss thought, hey, you guys are doing a good job of getting a lot of ties out. And They can only stand a half a day. Have to get a new bum.
So, how did things? How did it turn out that you went? Did you go right from working on the railroad to going into the Navy, or did you have?
Oh no, I worked on a couple 300 little jobs. But
were they exciting as the railroad?
No.
No.
See, we only got 99 cents a day in our board.
On the railroad?
Mm-hmm. We got a free ride though. In the caboose.
They didn't make you run along behind.
When we want to go home on a weekend.
Oh, I see.
And the worst food, I never had such horrible food in my life. They'd peel the potatoes and let them sit out and they all turn blue.
Oh, yeah?
I think it's blue. Mm-hmm. We had some kind of a jelly. We called it hoof and horn.
Ew.
Because we knew it was made out of old cow's hoofs and stuff, you know, like jelly. One time we had some old, supposed to be roast beef or something for supper, and we couldn't eat that stuff, and I threw a big platter of it out the back door, and it disappeared before it even hit the ground. I had always a bunch of dogs out there with their mouths open, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd gobble it up, and the old bull cook would come in and say, "Hey, we need some more meat. What'd you do with the meat we had? We ate that. Oh, you know dang well you didn't eat that meat." And he tried to get us fired. But when we left, I had to go back to school. The old cook had an old lady cook and stuff, you know, and they cried when they left.
I bet they did.
Because it was different with us than just bums all the time.
So. Oh, I bet. So how far away was your house from the school when you went to school?
Well, when I went to school, it was about 5 miles to school.
And so you guys walked back and forth to school?
We didn't have school buses in those days.
So you just had to walk?
So I'd either ride a mule or walk.
Ride
I used to run, especially in the wintertime when it was cold. And I had old sneakers, you know, and my feet would freeze if I didn't hurry and run. So I stayed in good shape just running.
So how did it happen that you came to join the Navy? What led you to join the Navy?
There was a couple of other older boys that joined the Navy first, and they come home and they had the best looking black shoes I ever seen in my life. We always had these old clodhoppers, you know, with the soles pulling off.
Uh-huh.
And they had these nice uniforms. Gee whiz. I said, that's for me. So right out of my junior year, I went down to St. Joe and seen the recruiter. I wanted to join up right then. He said, well, you have such an overbite, you'll never be able to eat our Navy food. You better go to the dentist, get your teeth squared away, and come back and see about getting in. So I said, okay. So I went and finished my senior year in high school. Went back down to see him. Well, I see you've been to the dentist, got your teeth squared away. Come on in. Never been to the dentist yet. And but he just wanted me to go back and finish school. So.
Yeah.
So I had to sign up for 6 years.
6 years.
And I'd been gone with this girl. And her folks thought a lot of me, you know. They wanted me to run the farm for them, marry the daughter. And when I went, he took me down to St. Joe to sign up. He was about to cry all the way. Oh, it's just like losing my son. Everything, see?
Aww. All
right. And, oh my goodness.
So what was it like when you joined up? Where'd you go? And
well, sign up for the Navy, then went up to Great Lakes Naval Training Station out of Chicago. 9 weeks of boot camp.
What do you remember about boot camp? Does anything stick out in your mind about it?
Oh yeah. We had a whaleboat pulling cruise, you know, we get in and run races, a bunch of us, you know, all rowing the whaleboat, see who would do it the fastest. And I remember we slept in hammocks. Had sea bags, put our clothes in. When we had a bag inspection once a week, we'd have to lay all of our clothes out on a mattress cover on the floor, on the deck. One time I had to go to the head, and I come running back, you know, and just about time they got to my bag, and I couldn't stop, I slid right through mine.
Oh no, you slid right through your stuff?
Right through all my stuff.
Oh my God.
They gave me okay though. wash your own clothes, you know, and buckets and stuff.
In training camp, you don't really choose what you're going to do, right?
And they tell you what you're going to do.
I mean, but you don't. Do you start your specialty work there in training camp? Like if you were going to be an infantry person, or
heck no.
Or I guess you would be infantry. In the
because
Navy,
we're out drilling every day, you know, marching and drilling and all that sort of thing. And lots of exercise.
So after you got done with boot camp. After boot camp went on.
Well, boot camp, then I still had a while to stay there, you know, so I spent a lot of time in the gym, so they let me teach wrestling and judo and stuff. So I was teaching this guy all the judo I knew, and then I let him throw me for a while, and they threw me and broke my leg.
Oh no, the guy you were training broke your leg?
Mm-hmm. I went to the hospital for 9 weeks.
Oh, well, that was nice. They had pretty nurses there.
Oh, I had some nice ones. And, but it's a good thing I did, because almost all the people that went to sea, right, by the time I went to the hospital, they went out the Asiatic fleet off of Japan around, you know, and when the war started, they all got, most of them got killed or captured.
Wow, so it was
so, I made out pretty good. So in December, though, I went to the USS Yorktown in Pearl Harbor.
What was that like?
Well,
what did you think the first time you got there? Do you remember what it was like when you got there? You saw what you were gonna, where you were gonna be, and what you were gonna do,
well,
and that kind of stuff.
I rode a cruiser from Long Beach, California, to Pearl Harbor, and then I had my my hammock, you know, with a little mattress all sliced, tied up in my sea bag, and I had to climb this tall damn gang plank, kind of twisting around up like that, you know, and I thought I'd never make it up there. And they show us where we're supposed to live, you know, compartment right there, second deck down. And we had little metal lockers and a bucket to wash your clothes in, and we had water hours, you know. You couldn't take a shower until about 4:30 in the afternoon, and everybody go down there, crowd around, do showers, you know, and you try to get in there and get wet, and you come back out and soap up, and you go back in to rinse off. And it was really a mess.
How come showers were like that? Why was it like that?
Well, those days things were in the primitive, so,
yeah. Oh, just because there were so many people?
You didn't have any privacy in those days. Or now, you know, like, you can go in and have a shower, or you can be by yourself, but not then. We didn't mind. We didn't know any better, because we didn't have running water at home anyway.
So what was going on I mean, I'm trying to get a place in history of where this was. So is this like in 1940?
That was 1940. So the ship was based at Pearl Harbor. And we'd go out and teach, I mean, let the pilots, you know, practice landings on the ship. And we did this for quite a while. In early 41, we went through the Panama Canal and started escorting ships towards England, you know,
so what was happening in the war then? What was going on?
Well, Germany had already declared war on all that money. Except us.
Uh-huh.
So we were escorting that. You know, we had cruisers and destroyers with us, you know, task forces. We'd escort them over. Our planes would go out, and if they seen a German submarine, we couldn't sink them ourselves, but we would call the English, you know, and they would go.
You couldn't sink them on the ship that you were on?
See, we weren't at war yet.
Oh, I see.
So we would just tell the English, and they would go out and try to sink them.
What kind of ship was the Yorktown? Was it like a cruiser or a destroyer?
No, it was
an
aircraft carrier.
Oh, aircraft carrier.
Yep.
And so what was your job on the aircraft carrier?
Well, I was on the hangar deck. The first 3 months, I was a compartment cleaner.
What's a compartment cleaner?
Well, you know, just like housekeeping.
Oh, I see.
Make sure the deck was swabbed and wax and everything, and all the lockers were polished, and the buckets were shined, and all that sort of thing. And I scrubbed the paint and scrubbed all the paint off and then had to paint it again.
Oh my gosh.
I kept a clean compartment.
Was there, at that time, was there like a, it was kind of hard to keep people busy because we were just kind of like on standby or something?
Oh no, we were busy all the time. Like every day, three times a day, we would sweep the hangar deck. Mm-hmm. We'd all start at one end. Each one of us had one of the big old push brooms. And we would polish that dang hangar deck. And I, also one of my jobs before breakfast was to polish the bright work, all the brass and stuff, you know.
Wow.
And, we stayed busy all the time. And then we'd have to chip all the paint off the hangar deck and the steel, you know, and then repaint it.
What was it like to travel when you first, you know, I'm just thinking somebody that lived in Missouri. Of course, you were kind of mobile anyway, though, on the trains and stuff, but I'm just trying to imagine what that would be like to end up in Hawaii on a aircraft carrier.
Well, I tell you, before I joined the Navy, I'd never been more than 60 miles from home.
Wow.
And then when I went to Great Lakes, that was a big trip, and on a train. Mm-hmm. And then when I left on a troop train from Great Lakes to San Diego, I was a seaman second. And they put me in charge of a whole carload of hoots. I lost about six of them on the way.
So you mean they just escaped?
When the train would stop, you know, they'd get out and want to go and buy something or something, you know, and sometimes they wouldn't get back on the train. So we got down to San Diego, and they put us to work putting new degaussing cables on these old destroyers and chipping paint on them and everything, you know.
So, like, we were ready in the fleet for war. We were getting all of our...
Well, we were trying to get ready to go. We kind of knew, I mean, the topside knew that we eventually go to war anyways with Germany. And we had suspicions about Japan, too, I think, see. Mm-hmm.
So as time goes on and 1942 comes, what happens between 1940 and 1942 for you?
Well... See, in 41, we were over in the Atlantic, mm-hmm. escorting ships, and I was training to be a metalsmith, aviation metalsmith, and it was our job on the hangar deck to repair any damage to the planes, you know,
mm-hmm.
so I had a lot of good experience on that. Then we were in Norfolk, Virginia when war was declared. So we went into the Navy Yard in Portsmouth and they tacked on a bunch of guns, you know, just tacked them on, and then we left Norfolk, Virginia, and went to the Panama Canal, you know, went through there, and the welders were finishing the welding and everything on the guns. That was up on the catwalks on the flight deck and around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we also had a whole hangar deck full of soldiers we were taking out there too. And I never did get the mess hall. I got me a case of pork and beans and a case of candy bars. And that's what I ate all the way there.
Oh my word.
Because there was lines, seemed like day and night, trying to get down the mess hall, see.
Mm-hmm.
Long lines of people.
Two.
So see, that the war was declared December the 7th, 1941. And so by the time we got to San Diego, it was about 42, so we loaded up a bunch of stuff and headed down into the Pacific, and we never did get back to San Diego with that ship. We were pulling raids on the Japanese. See, they'd taken over a whole bunch of islands down the South Pacific. So we were getting attacked, and we were attacking, and one time there we spent 101 days on that ship without ever stopping or getting in the port.
101 days.
That's a long time.
Oh boy.
But we were down there in the Coral Sea Battle.
What was that like?
Oh, it was awful. I was second class then, and I had a damage control 40. And our battle station was right there on this big square double hatch, you know, where a ladder went this way and another one went this way. And this hatch was about 6-7 foot square, heavy metal and everything. And I'd just gotten up to see how the Lexington was making out. See, it was over on our port side and it was really getting hit. Torpedoes, bombs, and everything. Just as I walked over there to look out, a bomb come down by where I'd been sitting. Went through three decks and come back. It was about a 2,000 pound armor piercing bomb.
Wow.
It killed 30 some people, three decks down, and come up and kill all my troops.
Oh.
About seven of them.
Oh.
I would have been right there with them if I hadn't walked over to the side of the ship there.
Yeah.
And then everybody was around. I had to start fighting fires. Because we got two or three more hits, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, it seems like every Friday, we'd have what they called a zone inspection those days. And we'd pull out all the fire hoses, take sand, soap, and brushes, and scrub them real white and clean.
Oh.
Oh, they look pretty.
You've got to keep the fire.
When we went to fight the fires, where they'd been flat and was all cracked and leaking, see.
Uh-huh.
And gee, it was hardly any water would come out the ends.
Oh, gosh.
So after that, we didn't scrub any more fire hoses.
But they looked nice.
Oh, they looked pretty.
So, did you get to see any of what was going on in Alaska? You know, the part of World War II that took place in Alaska at all?
Well, see, we didn't. We were too busy anyway to even think about Alaska. Because after the Coral Sea Battle, we come back to Pearl Harbor, and we had to get blown up.
Repair work done. Mm-hmm. But before we could get it done, here comes the Battle Midway.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, that's right. I'd forgotten about that.
So we had to go out with two other carriers. And
are you still in the Yorktown now?
Right. Mm-hmm. And fight that battle. And we were supposed to be the rear guard because we weren't really battle ready. But we were the only ones that got hit.
Wow.
So we got sunk out there, had to abandon ship.
They said that some of that, that for at the Battle of the Midway, they were trying to divert, that part of the Aleutian campaign was about trying to divert the American North Pacific Fleet.
Well, see, the Japanese planned on diversion, and they thought they would go up and hit the Aleutians through their sea, Alaska, while we were down there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did, but they didn't really make a lot of headway out there.
And they didn't divert enough to really save themselves.
Right.
So, I mean, I know you went to Japan. I'm trying to think of when. That must have been after the end of World War II then, huh?
Oh, that wasn't. I didn't get through Japan until 1954.
Oh, so what happens in between time?
We're still fighting the war, see. After our Yorktown was sunk, we finally got back to Pearl Harbor and then the United States. And I went into another squadron and trained with that. And then in the fall of 43, I went back to sea on the escort carrier.
And what was going on then? I mean, what were we doing?
We were still out there trying to run the Japanese off, see, like a bunch of small islands, and then Guam and the Marianas Islands and Marshall Islands, and all that sort of thing.
Now, we had bases there in Guam and the Marshall Islands, right?
Well, see, the Japanese took Guam away from us. and we had to take it back. Remember, when we were doing it, we were just offshore, and we would send our fighters and torpedo planes, bombers, and over, bomb the Japanese and stuff, you know. And after we got that back from them, then we went up to Saipan and some of those other islands right there, and kept pushing them back.
What was it like being in that part of the world? I mean, do you have any strong memories of it?
Fond memories?
Strong.
Strong. When you're getting killed, I mean, I think you're going to get killed all the time. There's pretty strong memories there.
Uh-huh.
And they weren't really good memories. I know every now and then, like we'd have our evaporators on the ship break down, we'd have to go up and take a shower in the rain on the flight deck.
Is it evaporators? Is that how they had fresh water on board?
Yeah, they evaporate salt water to make fresh water. Too.
Wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, we didn't have big tanks to haul fresh water around. We had to make our own.
And what ship were you on when you went to Guam and the Marianas?
It was called the first. It was called the Coral Sea, and then they were going to build a bigger Coral City, so they renamed us the Anzio.
The
Anzio. It was a small escort ship.
Mm-hmm.
And we had 1 5-inch gun on the fantail, and all the rest of them were 40 millimeters and 20 millimeters up around the flight deck and stuff. And there was three of us, three carriers, small carriers all together, one task force. One morning I'd been down in the galley getting a cup of coffee, and about that time, that dang explosion happened, you know. I thought we were hit, so I dropped my coffee and ran all the way to flight deck. But it was one of the other carriers that was blowing up right off to our port. And we're just going up 500 feet in the air, parts of, you know. 23 minutes later, there was nothing left. You couldn't even see there'd been a ship there.
Wow.
But anyway, I spent the rest of the war on that ship. Most of it. I transferred to Jacksonville, and finally in 1953, I went on another, in between, of course, I've been on another carrier in the Mediterranean and stuff, you know, but what you're trying to work me to is coming up here, wasn't it?
Oh, no, I just kind of was interested in the whole Navy experience. But yeah, I'm interested in Alaska, but what was it like to be in the Mediterranean?
Oh, it was nice. We didn't have a lot of money in those days. You know, the government didn't, you know, so we spent most of the time in port. We'd go out of one port, and about sometimes the same day, we'd go into another one. See.
What do you remember any countries particularly? Like, were you like in Greece? And
oh, yeah, I am. We went up to Portugal first, Lisbon, Portugal, and spent a few days. And that was a nice place, with bullfights and stuff, you know. And then we pulled into Gibraltar, and I took some leave and flew over to right across there in North Africa.
Morocco?
Where my brother station with the Marine Sea.
Tangier?
I can't hear you.
Is that Tangier?
Tangier, Morocco, right. That's where my brother Floyd, he was a senior Marine and at the Marine Legation. So I spent a few days with him, come back to the ship, and then we went into France, Cannes, France, and Florence, Italy, and Naples, Italy, and then went down to Sicily, and went up to Spain, Valencia, Spain, for a few days, and down to Greece, had Thanksgiving dinner in 1953, and Turkey. Imagine having a turkey dinner in Istanbul, Turkey.
Is that what they had? Oh, but the Navy had it.
On the ship, right.
Yeah. What was the mission? What was the Navy's mission in the Mediterranean then?
Well, showing the flag, showing our support.
And who was president then, in 1953? Eisenhower? No. Eisenhower.
No, Eisenhower come after that.
Was Truman?
Because he come aboard our ship as a general. He was a senior general in the whole NATO portion of it, I believe. But not too long after that, he ran for president and made it.
So basically, they were just showing that America was on its feet and was a military power, and
right.
kind of like glad, almost like glad handing in a way.
You might say, I guess. But anyway, we'd be out showing the flag and flying, and sometimes we'd have visitors come aboard and all that sort of thing. No, it was a nice trip over there, about 7 months. And in 53, well, we went back over there from Jacksonville, Florida, and flew around for a while and went through the Suez Canal and through the Indian Ocean and up to Japan, and then went down to Australia and New Zealand.
Is this all on one trip?
Mm-hmm, 11 months.
Wow.
And then we come back to Philippines, and I got orders to Alameda, California. So I had to get off the ship, and I waited a whole month to get a ride back to the States.
Now, sometime between there, you got married somewhere in
I got married when I was at Alameda in 1943.
So you've been married for 10
years. I went home on leave in that rib, and then I went back and ran an apartment, and she come out to Oakland, and I'd flown up to Reno to meet the train she was on and get her off, and we get married. But she was on an earlier train, and she was down in Oakland while I was up there, and so she had to get on a bus and come back up. Yep.
So how did it come that so Korea comes in here some?
Yeah, see, in 53, see, Korean War started 50-51 there,
mm-hmm.
and that's one reason why we went through the Mediterranean and all up there, then we went off and spent quite a bit of time off Korea before we went to Australia.
This is kind of embarrassing for me, but I'm never was quite sure about what the cause of the Korean conflict was.
Well, see, there was North Korea and South Korea,
mm-hmm.
and North Korea was communist, and they decided they'd take over South Korea, see. And our thoughts was that if they did that, then they would just try to roll right on down across Australia and everywhere else, see. So we went over to help the South Koreans.
Was South Korea a democracy? Was it a democratic nation?
Sort of. Not a real good one, but better than nothing.
Right. That's when anti-communist movements were real strong then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my brother Floyd was in that war also, see. He'd been in the South Pacific, like Guadalcanal and down through there. In the World War II. So he was still a Marines and went into Korea.
Now, did you actually get involved in the conflict in Korea? Did you actually fight in that war?
Oh, yeah. See, we were supporting it with our airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
They'd go over and bomb and do all this and that and fight the North Korean planes and everything with our fighters and everything.
And you were an aviation metalsmith by then,
right,
so you worked on the flight deck still?
I worked on the flight deck and the hangar deck, preparing mm-hmm. airplanes and stuff, you know.
What kind of planes did they use?
We had, in the Korean War, we had jets like made by Grumman and McDonnell. I was in the Korean War, I was in, we had three Banshee photo planes, see, photographic planes. And I was the senior enlisted man in that bunch, and I was the leading chief and everything. So I had about 60 or more people to pick her up for airplanes.
So, how did you eventually, what was the setting that you came to, that you finally ended up in Alaska in?
Well, let me see. I got transferred, you know, I told you I got transferred to Alameda from my outfit in Jacksonville. And from Alameda, went down to Monterey, and then the time it came for transfer again, I put in for Woodby Allen's patrol squadron. I got transferred up there, patrol squadron 2. And this was in 56. So in November 15th of 1956, we deployed here to Kodiak in 6 months in my squadron.
When you use the term deploy, does that mean that the whole ship moves up here and works out of a different base or something?
No, we weren't on ships. It was a patrol squadron. We had these Lockheed Neptunes, two jets and two recip engines, and we would fly patrols out trying to spot Russian submarines and check on their ships and stuff out there, you know. We'd fly about 14 hours or more each flight.
What kind of work did you do then?
Well, I was in charge of the airframe shops. So we had airframes and power plants and electronics and all that sort of thing.
So was that on the ground here in Kodiak?
Hangar 3.
What year was that when you got here?
Huh?
What year?
1956.
1956.
We got up here in November the 15th, and it was about 5 degrees below zero, about 6 inches of snow, and it was cold. But I didn't mind it.
Definitely thought that's where you were going to retire as soon as you saw it.
Yeah, I still had a ways to go yet. No, we had a cheese club out here by Lake Louise. It had been an Army officers club, see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's old Fort Greeley and everything, isn't it, you know? And they were still using a lot of the old buildings left over from World War II. And then
at Lake Louise, where the Coast Guard housing is now, is that right, that area?
Right there. That's that lake right there, Lake Louise.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Was Fort Greeley at the mouth of the Muskogee River then? I mean, was there still remains of the fort there? Did you ever get to see it?
Well, it wasn't really a fort. Like, there was no big fortifications around there, see?
Oh.
It was just a big camp.
Mm-hmm.
Warehouses and barracks and other stuff like that.
Did the road pretty much end there then?
The road is not where it is now. Yet, followed up alongside Lake Louise there, and well, it followed along Boy Scout Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went right through where
Nemitz
Park is.
Mm-hmm.
And you see where an old bridge was.
Mm-hmm.
There on the Muskogee.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went up, followed the road as it is now for a ways. And then it turned left, kind of around sort of around the airfield in other ways, and then went up over a hill and down just about where Peterson School is, you know.
Uh-huh.
I made a 90-degree turn and went on up to the base. And the that time, one main gate was out just before you would get to Dead Man's Crew.
To the base, the Navy base, they had a gate.
Oh, it was a big base. It took a lot of territory.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other main gate was right out here where Samson Stoddard Moorage is.
Wow. And was that restricted?
Oh, yeah. Like civilians from downtown, they'd have to pass through the gate, get permission to go. If they want to go to Chiniac, they'd have to go through both gates, you know, and check in both ends. Then the Navy property was all the way out just before you dropped down towards all that flat area, just before you get to American River, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one, it went all the way up just before you dropped down to Anton Larson.
Oh, I never realized that.
And then right there on the side of Red Man's Curve.
Wow.
All that area on the right as you go towards town was all Navy. All those hills where the natives are claiming it now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And also on the left there, that was all Navy also.
So that would be like Boy Scout Lake area, back behind Boy Scout Lake area, is that what you're talking about? And
yep.
Then along
yep.
on the other side of the road as
mm-hmm.
well?
That was all Navy.
Wow, that's incredible. How did they use that land? Did they use it for maneuvers or did they just use it for security? Did they use that land for maneuvers or did they use it for
no.
security?
It was just left over from the war, Navy property. Then Foreman's Mountain was all Navy also, see.
Mm-hmm. What about Bell's Flats? I remember when we moved out to Bell's Flats,
see,
we used to find a lot of old Navy stuff out here.
There used to be a dairy right there where there was a guy named Bell's that had a dairy right there.
Right, exactly, whereabouts?
Just about where you'd been around from the water hole and
kind of where the rodeo grounds is at?
Right, that was a dairy. And then, of course, going further out here, this was all, had been an army camp, see.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Was the army here the same time the Navy was?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but that was exciting times.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot more army than there was Navy. You see, when the army left, well, then Navy just took it over, see. And then, like this building right there, this had been a big coal storage building.
Mm-hmm. This building right here?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So when I bought the property, the only thing that was left of it was the foundation and the floor.
Uh-huh.
So, old Captain Acker and I went out and tore down old parts of us and brought them here. And I erected them up.
How come they used Quonset Hut so much? How come that was such a
because
favorite?
Because that was one of the most practical buildings because they could withstand all kinds of weather and everything. See.
How did they heat them? How was the heat?
How did they heat them?
Mm-hmm.
Old space heaters and stuff.
Oh my. We found just up the road here, we used to find a whole bunch of records, like it was a communication station.
Yeah, see,
or?
Right across the road there had been a radio station. I used to go over there, and the big old platters this big.
Uh-huh. Great big ones.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened to the army? What happened to the army here? Did they just withdraw when things?
Yeah, they just finally all withdrew and left. See.
I was going to ask you. I remember that there was those watchtowers along Buskin River. Do you remember those? Those towers that used to go alongside the river. You took a couple down. Remember those old wood towers?
Oh, it seems like it. But on the way to Chiniac, you know, there was gun emplacements and everything out there.
Mm-hmm. You don't remember that? Because I don't really remember it either, but I remember that we took down some kind of watchtowers or some kind of towers out there along Buskin River. And I was wondering if that had something to do with the Navy.
Hmm.
Don't recall?
No, I don't know.
Huh. Was the submarine dock in Woman's Bay?
You see, there was a submarine dock just at the foot of Marine Hill.
Uh-huh.
Right out there. And then we had repair facilities down on Niman's Peninsula, see. Mm-hmm. And,
did submarines come in quite often here? Or regularly?
Well, at that time, I guess they did. You know, when we had the earthquake in 64, all that settled about 8 feet, So.
Were you here for the earthquake?
Mm-hmm.
What was it like for you?
Well.
Let me turn the tape over because this is good. I'm afraid we're going to run out. Just a second.
Yeah, still going.